Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Dimes of Crime. This is your host, Haley.
This is Richa.
Okay, Richa, are you ready for today?
I am ready.
Awesome.
But what are you drinking?
If you follow me on Instagram, you probably know I'm drinking a homemade cream soda, vanilla extract, house-made simple syrup, soda water out of the soda stream, and then half and half. And then I put rum because that was the winner vote.
Oh, wow. I'm so impressed just by the effort you've put into making that drink. I don't know why homemade simple syrup sounds like so much effort to me. I know it's just one part water, one part sugar, and like melt it together.
Yep,
but the idea of making that for one drink seems like so much effort to me. So,
well, you can keep it and store it.
Yeah, so every time I make it, our mother-in-law taught me that, is to make it in bulk and then to put it in like a bottle in the fridge. So then you have it for future drinks.
Yeah, for sure. I was thinking actually it would be kind of fun if we added to our episodes, maybe not right away because I know we have a lot on our plates, but eventually we do our own cocktails and we talk about the ingredients.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of just like you talking about the ingredients and me going, I'm drinking red wine today or I'm drinking straight whiskey today.
Also, I mean,
so it's going to be right. Haley doing a lot of the creative thinking because it's Haley and Connor, her husband, that do a lot of the mixing every time we get together. They're like the pro drink mixers in our family. So,
yes, I mean, we bartended, both of us. So and I must work as a server. Anyways, let's kind of get into it. What are you drinking?
Oh my God, I'm drinking water. I'm drinking water because it's like late at night and I've had my fair share of carbs for the day. Like we had pizza. And so I feel like I sound like a health nut, but I really am not. Haley knows me. I eat a lot, but because of like personal struggles that I've had with pregnancy and whatever, which I don't really feel comfortable sharing on this social platform, I am just careful about my health moving forward. So that's what I do. I allow myself like one cheat thing in the day usually, and hopefully a lot of times it's not even once during a day. I'll do it like only rare instances during the week. So today it was pizza and I'm cutting it off there.
That's not a bad thing to do.
Yeah.
All right, well, today's story, it needs a huge disclaimer. There's going to be sexual assault, abuse, and that could be triggering to some, especially for survivors of those things. So just keep that in mind. And we can get into it.
Who are we doing?
Today's story is based off the case that changed the way law enforcement treats victims of domestic violence, and for the better. This is the story of Francine Hughes.
Oof.
Francine Moran, birth name, was born August 17, 1947, in Stockbridge, Michigan. She was named after a French musician.
Is this our first case back home in a long time? Like in the States?
In the States?
No. Michelle Avila was States.
And I think Hewitt, too.
Yeah. Never mind. I feel like it just seems like it for me. Because
right,
because
we did the one in Japan. And then
yeah, we've recorded after. This is like our second time recording after so long. So I feel like we haven't done a local case in a while. But
for
okay,
sure.
Never mind. That's just my bad.
So she was born in Stockbridge, Michigan. She was named after a French musician. Francine was known to be funny and popular. She had dimples that made you fall in love. Her father was a farm worker who was known to be an alcoholic who was abusive to Francine's mother. Her mother would say things like, "You do what's best for your husband." Now, during this time, men beating women behind closed doors, I would say, was considered normal. And it wasn't really talked about. And if you were to talk about it, it would be considered airing your dirty laundry.
Yep. I feel like that's still sort of a thing today.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's common or it's not. I have no idea on what the statistics are. But I feel like domestic violence is still such a... It's not tabooed, but a lot of the times the survivors feel the need to hide the shame and the guilt they feel around that. And so right. there's always this hesitation to come forward. Like they had something to do with it, you know?
Right. I couldn't find much about Francine's early life, which actually surprises me considering this case has inspired books and movies.
Yeah.
When Francine was a young girl around the age of 15 or 16, she would go out with her friends on Friday and Saturday nights driving around. One of those nights, she met James Mickey Hughes, a 18-year-old boy who seemed different than the others. He was tall and handsome, and he fell hard for Francine. He would pressure her into dating, but she really didn't seem too interested at first. His constant pressure finally worked, and she started going out with him. That pressure soon turned into pressure into sex. When Francine would refuse because she wanted to wait for marriage, he would insist on them getting married. Even though she would resist, he kept smooth-talking her with romance, saying things like, he can't live without her. She felt loved, a love that she had never experienced. Now, Francine is 16 years old, so I could see how at this age, someone falling for you that hard, you, one, have never experienced that, and two, you would instantly, like, you know, that would...
Yeah, it's like a fairy tale that you've, you know, I hate to say it, but, I mean, I was 16 once, and I had a boyfriend at the time, and you feel like you know everything about the world, and this has to be it. It's like teenage puppy love. Now, I'm not saying that they're not people who fall in love with their high school sweethearts, and that's the person they're with for the rest of their life, but I right. feel like that's an exception. That's right. not
it's not,
the rule.
It's kind of rare.
Yeah, it's very rare that the first person you're with is the person you end up being with. Although, when you're in that phase, it very much feels like that. It's your first love. It's your first relationship. And to feel that wanted and desired by someone, especially your first time, can feel so good that it's almost hard. It's almost hard to recognize it any other way.
Right.
Also, can I just say it's really funny that I can see like Connor in the background and he's just so nonchalantly like listening to the story as he's still.
He has headphones on. He's playing video games.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was just like, how is he staying so like unattached?
I tried to talk to him about the story and he just was not. No. Stop. Walk away. I'm not listening.
I need my noise canceling yeah. headphones.
I think he could probably hear some of it, but here we are. One night, as Mickey was pressuring her into having sex, she did give in. They had done it in the back of a car, of his car, which was parked in a cornfield. She recalls it being...
And that was her first time?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
She recalls it being bad. It hurt, she said, and felt dry inside. She really didn't know what to expect. Nobody had ever told her what to expect. She would say later she felt used, giving something away that she didn't want to give. But those words her mom told her as a girl made her feel that she needed to please him. Francine was nervous that she was pregnant and also was upset that she gave away her virginity. She felt that she needed to marry Mickey. So at just 16 years old, Francine dropped out of high school to marry Mickey. They got married on November 4th, 1963.
Oh my God, that is like a... It's just very close to the year my mom was born. So it's just like a surreal realization about how old it is.
Was your mom? But she your, was, oh, your mom wasn't living in the States during this time.
No. Anyway, so yeah, it's 1963. She's 16. And she feels used. And she feels like she gave away something she didn't want to do. But she's also pregnant,
She's not pregnant, but she... At this time, you know, in the 60s, she didn't know anything about protection or anything. And she was just like nervous that she could be pregnant and then felt like because she gave away her virginity, something she wanted to save until marriage, that they were to get married.
She was like obligated. She was like tainted goods and yes. She needed to. Okay. All right. Okay. I'm following.
It didn't take long after the marriage for the abuse to start. Francine would wear the clothes she always wore. And this triggered Mickey. He feared that she would attract other men. So he ripped all the clothes off her body, saying she looked like a slut and she could never wear such things again. When he saw Francine crying, he would apologize, saying he swore he would never do it again. She felt scared, but she was 16 years old and didn't know what to do or where to go. She had just gotten married. She had begged her parents to let her drop out of school and get married. So she took his word for it.
So the abuse right now is just in the form of being possessive?
Yeah, but he like physically ripped her clothes off of her body and like shoved her on the bed naked. And then, yeah.
Wait, so shoved her on the bed naked and there was like marital rape involved or?
I'm not sure about this time, but eventually there will be, yeah.
Oh, gosh. That's hard to hear.
I know. I've done so much of this story and watched the movie and I have chills reading it right now.
Oof. Have you heard of that new story that broke out at the Mavs game?
No.
Where this 15-year-old girl went to the bathroom at the Mavericks Stadium. It's a basketball team. And she was there with her dad. She went to the bathroom and never returned. Turns out she got sex trafficked from the stadium.
Oh, my God.
And 10 days later was found in, like, Oklahoma at an extended stay. I think if I'm quoting the hotel wrong, I apologize, but I think it is an extended stay in. And yeah, she was found like 11 days later. Can you imagine what this poor girl must have gone through? Not to mention her dad. Like I was just reading the story right before we got on here because it broke out huge and it's been like everywhere on social media and all the news outlets. And I was just trying to like learn more about it, and apparently the dad reported it to the Dallas PD, and the Dallas PD only looked during the course of the basketball game. But because she was a juvenile, from what I very briefly read, apparently the law is that they treat all juveniles as runaways until there is like an actual indication of abduction.
That's what I've been saying a lot. Like last time we did one, when we talked, we had this conversation as how police tend to treat teenagers as runaways, like automatically,
which is so counterproductive. It should be treated the other way around
because
I feel like you should treat adults as runaways and minors as like an actual emergency.
Everyone should be treated equally as an emergency, but like if you treat every teenager like they got abducted, the worst case scenario, you're gonna find someone who ran away. Like, you know what I mean?
I mean, I agree. In like a perfect world, you would treat everything as like an emergency, and you would allocate the perfect amount of resources to everything. But if you are going to give something a priority, and if you are going to automatically assume that someone is a runaway, I would assume that an adult has that agent of freedom more than like a juvenile does. Mm-hmm. Like a 15-year-old, to say that a 15-year-old who went to a basketball game with her dad and went to the bathroom and just didn't come back
seems like a weird place to run away.
Yeah, it's just bizarre. And then to think that you're the dad, you go to this basketball game and your daughter doesn't come back. So now you're stressed. And then the Dallas PD just says, no, go home and you have to file this in your jurisdiction. Like, what?
Yeah.
You're losing like crucial time. Like she probably was like taken and moved God knows where in the time that the police chose not to help. So I was reading that there's like implications of this case, and the amount of times I've said the word like I already hate, but so I'm going to try to avoid saying that. But I was reading that this case is going to have implications on laws of how, like, why did Dallas PD not do more? Why did they treat it the way they did? Why did extended stay allow a registered sex offender to book multiple hotel rooms for the same night? It's bizarre. They caught 8 people. They arrested and charged 8 people that were involved in the abduction and the sex trafficking of this 15-year-old girl.
That poor 15-year-old girl. That's terrible.
For what she went, I can't imagine. Anyways, going back to the story, so she's 16. She's clearly starting to be abused by Jake, you said?
Mickey. James is his first name, but we're going to call him Mickey. That's what everyone calls him.
Okay, Mickey. And now she's scared because she clearly begged her parents to drop out of school to get married.
Yeah, she
and
feels
so
stuck.
While there's no marital rape yet, it's just a lot of invasion of
and space. Tearing her down. Like, this is outfits that she wore all the time, and now he's saying she looks like a slut.
Yeah, he's beating down her self-esteem and confidence.
And of course, he said he would never do it again. So
they all say that.
Right. Well, it didn't take long after the marriage for the abuse to start. And of course, it did happen again. Mickey saw Francine looking at another man's hands and he became violent when they got home. During this time, they were living above his parents' house. So his parents heard the commotion when Mickey started to beat Francine. His parents came to pull him off her and confront him. Mickey then would turn to his dad, threatening him. Mickey's mom called the police. The police would come, make some notes, and leave. It was said that they... It was said when they were in front of Francine's parents, Mickey's would behave like a gentleman. So the he sees her looking at this man's hands. He gets jealous. He waits till they get home. Then he starts beating on her, like wailing and punching her and hitting her.
Yep.
And the parents hear it and they come down and they
his parents
who live above them hear it. And they come down and they like try to pull Mickey off of her. And the mom calls and then Mickey turns to his dad and starts like threatening his dad or beating his dad. And then Mickey's mom calls the police. Police come and they don't do anything. They write notes.
They write notes, but they don't do anything because you said that he was supposedly acting gentlemanly in front of Francine's parents.
Yeah, that's not why the police didn't do anything. And we'll talk about this again. And I'll probably mention it again. But there's a law during this time that if the police don't actually see with their own eyes, like him actually hitting her, not even like if she were to have a black eye from the incident or a bloody head, but they have to physically see with their eyes him hitting her, not even verbally abusing her, to arrest him.
Yeah, that's like that's a real thing. This is not something to brag about, but I'm not trying to brag about it. Not like I have a groupie or whatever, but I've had a stalker incident with me like from a very, very long time ago now, and I actually looked into reporting that to the police. And they said until there's an actual physical threat and he's physically invading my space, or like there's an actual physical act of threat that's been made, then they can't do it.
Which is crazy because
it's just hearsay. I couldn't even file a restraining order, even though I knew the name of the person, I knew the phone number, I had proof that he was making phone calls to me, all of that, and they didn't do anything. I couldn't do anything. I had to just change my phone number.
Which is actually insane because a lot of stalker incidents do turn deadly.
Yeah.
Shortly after this incident, Francine fell pregnant with their first child, Christy. Before long, she had 4 kids in total. The abuse continued. Wow.
That means she already stayed with him for like 4 years.
At least, yeah.
All while dealing with this, and she was only 16.
Right. The abuse continued. Sometimes it would be so bad and others awful. He would abuse Francine in front of her children. And as the pressure of feeding more mouths grew, so did the violence. But that didn't stop Mickey from spending most of their money on alcohol. He would get so drunk and come home, beat her, rape her, and pass out. Now, remember again, during this time, domestic violence wasn't talked about, and she saw her mom being abused by her father growing up. She was young when they got married, feeling like this was normal. Many times, Francine would try to leave, despite all that, and she would try to get help. She called the police and got on government assistance. Each time, she was turned down without any help. Trapped in a nightmare until one social worker did help Francine. She filed for divorce 1971 and she got herself and her children out. Despite the divorce, Mickey would ignore it. He would show up and continue the cycle of abuse, still raping her, still beating her.
Wait, so she finally gets out, she gets divorced, she moves out and takes her kids with her.
She gets a divorce.
And Mickey just keeps ignoring the fact that they've gotten divorced and just would get drunk routinely and show up at her doorstep. Yep.
Yes, but I'm not exactly sure like who got kicked out, what house that she stayed in. Or to me, I feel like after reading, and a lot of the articles I read were just like the same exact wording and the same exact thing over and over again, but I think that she stayed in their house, so she kicked him out and he would come back and get drunk, beat her, and rape her, ignoring the advice.
Okay, got it.
Or
and there was clearly no police help for her.
No.
So there was no one monitoring the situation. Yeah. Okay.
So just weeks after the divorce, Mickey was in a serious car accident.
Karma.
Right? Causing a head injury and multiple fractures. He would even go into a coma. And I kind of don't think they did like sobriety checks and stuff, but my guess is that he was wasted when he was driving, but who knows?
Wait, so they didn't do like DUIs at the time or any sort of
I'm not sure, but that's my guess is that he was probably under the influence of some kind. He also was like in and out of a lot of jobs because he couldn't really hold a job for his alcoholic problems. When he awoke, he asked for Francine. Feeling guilty, she visited him and brought him home, where she took care of him and nursed him back to health. She said she felt obligated to him. After Mickey recovered, the real hell started. Mickey would refuse to leave the house and would refuse to get a job. He drank more heavily and would continue to beat Francine. Sometimes he would beat her for hours before he would leave and go to a bar. If Francine tried to fight back, it would get him to be more violent. In the darkest moments, she would consider suicide. Maybe only then would the abuse stop. She would think of her children. Who would care for them? No one would love them like she did. She feared that if she packed up and ran away, that he would find them.
Oh my God. She felt trapped. My heart just sank.
I know, right?
I think it literally sank to the bottom of my stomach. And it's like a giant pit of rock just sitting there. That I can't imagine what being in that place feels like or looks like. And
right. Because your home is supposed to be your safe place, your sanctuary,
and you don't have that. The person who is violating that safety is a person who vowed to protect you from right. everything. So that's truly a place of desperation and helplessness that I don't think I've ever felt before. And the fact that I can feel this pit in my stomach when I've never felt that before, to only imagine what that means for her, is absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, it really is. 6 years after the divorce, in March of 1977, Francine was studying for secretarial school, which she was pursuing with the help of her mother. She would go to school each day, driving and studying despite the torture she was enduring at home. She would feel the anger building in Mickey as she would study or as she drove to school. She had wrote a paper titled, quote, "What I Know About Myself Now," quote. Going deep into her thoughts at the end of the paper, she wrote, "It's hard for me to make changes in my life. It's easier for me to leave things as they are and not disturb anything I know. I should be disturbing things more. I know I'm capable of so much more. I was waiting for something good or someone good to happen to me, but now I know nothing comes from luck and you have to make things happen." It was the morning of March 9th. Francine woke up that morning earlier than the others. As she sat sipping her coffee and read her term paper over, she left for school feeling accomplished by finishing her homework as she was falling academically behind. She was unusually happy. After school, one of her classmates would ask for a ride home. This pushed her arrival time home a little later than usual by 10 minutes. This infuriated Mickey. As he was yelling at her for being late, she walked to the mailbox and would grab the welfare check. They were out of groceries yet again. She told Mickey she needed to run to the store so she could prepare dinner, making Mickey even more mad, telling her she can't leave, that she needs to make a list first, and he needed to oversee it. Apparently, most foods would make Mickey sick to the point of throwing up, and he would blame Francine's cooking. By the time Francine made it to the store and back, she was completely exhausted. So she made frozen dinners instead of her usual homemade meals. When she pulled them out of the oven, a Mickey would throw a tantrum, calling Francine, quote, "a lazy bitch." She responded to him,
I'm not quiet because I don't have a reaction in this moment. I'm quiet because I can't find the words to describe what the rage boiling inside me. I have no words. Anyways,
as he's just calling her lazy, she's
won't get a job, is a drunk asshole, a complete dick of a person. No pun intended, or maybe I did, but I. what it, I lost. I'm at a loss of words at the rage that I feel.
So she responded to him, "I didn't think you were going to eat anyway." He would reply, quote, "That's the problem with you. You're always thinking," end quote. He would proceed to throw the dinner on the floor. And when she went to pick it up, he threw the trash out, rubbing the trash in her hair. He then started demanding that she drop out of school and started tearing up her textbooks, instructing her to burn them. When she refused, he would shake her, his eyes turning black. He looked at her and asked, "Do you want me to break your neck right now?" So she did what he said. She put her textbooks in a trash can and she burned him. She burned her textbooks, sorry. When she told him she would continue going to school, he threatened to use a sledgehammer to destroy her car. Francine, afraid for her life, ran to the door.
And this is a guy she's divorced?
Yeah, she's already divorced to him. And he's just living in her house.
Because she felt guilty that he was in an accident. Yeah. And now he's even more of a dick to her. Like, I don't. Where are people? Are her parents? I'm not blaming anybody, but literally, where is anyone? Neighbors? No one is around her to just offer a kind helping hand so that this idiotic dead weight of a man could get out of her life. I can't find enough crappy words. Like, I'm so flustered. I can't find enough of an insult for Mickey in my head.
It's a hard one for sure. Francine was afraid for her life, so she was running to the door. Mickey would stop her. She screamed to her oldest daughter, Christy, to call the police. When the police arrived, mind you, she's bloody. She had obviously
Please
been beaten.
Please tell me they took him away. If you tell me that there's no proof that Mickey did that to her, I'm gonna throw my microphone in. To something. All right,
well, prepare to throw your microphone.
Oh my God. They didn't do anything?
When the police arrived, they told her that they couldn't arrest Mickey because they themselves hadn't witnessed any abuse.
Are you fucking joking, police department in 1977 of Michigan? What the effing...
The law at the time was that they themselves would have to witness physical abuse, despite Mickey telling Francine in front of officers that this was all over for her because she had called the police. He also verbally attacked police officers, and despite all that, they left, leaving her with her ex-husband.
Honestly, seriously, who made that fucking ridiculous law? If there was ever going to be domestic violence, who was ever going to do it in front of an audience for there to be witnesses? How dumb.
Well, it just kind of goes back to, like, I mean, even nowadays with the whole Brian Laundrie thing. And how the police, I mean, I know that police officer feels really guilty, but letting them get back in the, like they said, you have to spend the night. At least they try to do something, but I mean.
I know there's arguments there about what the police officers could have done, and I get it.
Right.
But I have heard that
audio. I get both sides,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I have heard the audio, yeah. And that cop really did try to help Gabby. He tried to say, you're not, they separated them. He said, you're not around him anymore. Tell me the actual truth. And I understand that she was terrified. She couldn't. And yes, the argument can be made that the cop thought that she was super terrified and that instead of putting Brian Laundrie in a hotel, they should have put Gabby in the hotel so she had access to cell phone or like a phone to call someone.
I think despite any of it, they would have still gone together and it still would have happened.
Yeah.
Probably,
so I feel like that's such a hard place to be as a cop when you did what you think is the best. And now this girl's death is potentially on your guilty conscience, but I don't think it was all on the cop. At some point, we have to hold Brian Laundrie accountable for his dickhole of an action.
Like, 100%. Yeah, I agree with you.
Anyways, in this case, I don't understand what the cops are doing, but moving on.
Right. And Mickey basically threatened the cop's life.
Mickey is just
verbal assault doesn't mean anything at this point, I guess. As soon as officers left, he began beating Francine yet again. When he was done, she made dinner for the kids.
She made dinner?
Yeah. The kids hadn't eaten, so she's worried about
what
her kids.
With
so
the
she's
frozen
like, I'm
going to
make
meals?
My kids dinner. You didn't hear? He threw it on the ground. And then she went to go pick it up, throw it in the trash. He put trash in her hair.
Oh, my God. I was just so busy being madly boiled rage that I forgot that
part. He was mad because she cooked frozen dinners. He told her, I guess, we're never doing frozen dinners, but she made frozen dinners.
But everything makes him nauseous and sick, and so he must oversee the fucking grocery list. What a dickhead. Anyways.
Yeah.
So she makes dinner for the kids. Wow. Okay.
Mickey then threw the dinner on the ground and rubbed Francine's face in the mess. He demanded that she cook him dinner and bring it to him in his bed. At this point, she was limited on food. She made the best out of what they little they had. So she put like salmon patties, like canned salmon, I mean salmon patties and potatoes or whatever. When she was finished, she would be summoned to the bedroom. Mickey had his pants unzipped, and I'll spare you the details, but what happened next would be the very last time he would ever hurt Francine again. Francine would describe an impulse of wanting to put a pillow over his face to smother him, but she knew she was not strong enough.
I was going
to
say, hopefully she didn't go that route.
Right. When he was finished with the rape, Francine would go down to the living room. She would describe the feelings as, quote, helpless, frozen fury, a volcano blocked before it erupts, end quote.
I hope she burned Francine, him.
Worried about her children's empty stomachs before they had not eaten all day. They kept telling her they weren't hungry, however. They would all sit down and watch TV together in hopes to calm them down from the horror they had witnessed. As Mickey would lay in the bed upstairs, Francine sitting there with her kids, going through all the hard work in her head about school and how hopeless it seemed now, how her life had been horrible since meeting Mickey, and all the torture she had endured for 12 years. She
12 kept going years! Over. My 12 goodness!
Years. She kept going through thoughts and talking to herself. Quote, you don't owe him anything. Think about the kids. Don't let him ruin their lives too. You have to take them away. She began to come up with a plan about taking the kids and running away. But one of her children weren't home yet. She couldn't leave her child, Dana. She knew she would come back for her. She needed this time to be different. She needed to erase it and never come back. She would say that she was never going to come back because there was going to be nothing to come back to. She was going to burn the house down along with Mickey. The darkness overcame her and she couldn't think of anything else. She packed her kids into her car, which was just parked outside, grabbed a jug of gasoline and brought it up to the bedroom where Mickey lay, passed out drunk. She hesitated for a moment, but then she heard a voice. Do it. Do it. Do it. So she kept on. She poured gasoline around the bed where Mickey lied and lit a match. She watched as the fire grew before running to her car. She ended up driving herself to a county jail, crying and repeating over again, I did it, I did it. When fire crew got to the scene and stopped the fire that had engulfed the house, they found Mickey's body. He had died of smoke inhalation.
God, that is a painless death compared to what the fuck he put his wife through. And she's the one who went to the police and said, I did it. I hope they saw the bruises on her, which no thanks to them, he was able to put on her after they fucking left and then raped her.
Right.
I feel no remorse.
Francine was charged with first degree murder and felony murder, which equals life in prison. They would eventually drop the felony murder trial or murder charge in November. Just 8 months after she lit the match that burned her abuser and their home, her trial would begin. The trial is described as the most sensational trial in the county history. Many lawyers didn't want to take Francine's case, but one prosecutor believed Francine acted in self-defense.
Just one believed that she acted in self-defense. What the?
Psychiatrist would testify on behalf of Francine, saying that something snapped in her that night, saying she went temporarily insane.
I was going to say temporary insanity is the perfect plea here. And not just a perfect plea. It's true.
That this is the reason she killed her ex-husband. A term we call now as battered woman syndrome. Her children would also take the stand, saying that Francine was abused that day, all day, by their father. One even said they witnessed Mickey threatening her with a knife, saying the violence wasn't unusual and was common. The case got national attention. Women and women would gather and protest. They wanted a new legal definition for self-defense, especially for women. Outside the courthouse, hundreds of women would fill the stairs and streets holding signs that read, "Battered women need support, stop violence against women, and free Francine Hughes." The trial took place for 7 days when the jury of 10 women and 2 men took just 5 hours to come up with a unanimous decision that they found Francine Hughes not guilty of reasons for temporary insanity.
I feel so much joy in my heart. Relatives, but at the same time, I'm just sad that someone like Francine had to happen for the world or that state to say that we need a change here, which is so sad to me.
Right. Yeah, that these things have to happen for sure. The relatives of Mickey Hughes felt justice was not served and Francine got away with murder. One of his brothers even sent her a letter saying, "You are next." This caused fear in her that even after she was acquitted, she felt even the smallest tasks were daunting. Others would send her roses with a note that read, "To a battered rose that blooms again." One of the press asked Francine if she considered herself a liberated woman. She said, "I don't think I've ever been liberated, but I like to be." She struggled with motherhood after getting out. Remember, she spent 9 months behind bars. She really felt she would have to spend the rest of her life there. So she blocked off emotion towards her children. So it's hard for her to get close again. I know. Her children also had trauma from the incident and mixed emotions. Francine would party and drink in order to escape her awful past. However, she felt terrible for trying to self-destruct, so she snapped out of it. This is when she met a country singer, Robert Wilson. He had been released from parole for armed robbery. While he was in jail, he got a degree in psychology. Francine and Robert fell instantly in love, even despite Robert being told to not fall in love with a murderer. He knew, however, there was more to this story. They would get married and raise Francine's kids together. Francine had a dream to become a nurse. She would graduate nursing school as valedictorian. She had worked as a LPN in a few nursing homes. The story of Francine has been told in books and movies titled, quote, "The Burning Bed." And I did watch the movie.
Is it good?
It's actually really good and it's pretty accurate. It's just like it's hard to watch and then it's like old. You know, I don't really like watching older movies, so whatever. After years of a happy life with her husband and children and her dream career, Francine died due to complications of pneumonia at the age of 69. And that is the story of Francine Hughes.
That is so sad. I think it's been a while since I've... It's funny, as you were telling the story and I was listening to the story, I forgot that we were just a female criminal-only podcast. And I, for the first few minutes, was almost... thinking that this was going to be a story about Mickey eventually beating Francine to death. And then I reminded myself, no. This is actually a story about, which is kind of a spoiler for us. Because right. in that moment, I saw a glimmer of hope where I immediately knew that this was going to be a story about a battered woman that snapped and killed the abuser. And I kind of felt a sense of relief because this to me, and I don't feel bad saying that, because this to me is where the system failed to provide justice and you almost had to force a person to take that into their own hands. So,
100%.
Yeah. So I don't feel bad for Mickey here. I don't feel bad that Francine took a life. I feel no empathy for Mickey's family for losing that person. So
right. The one thing that is sad, I mean, I don't feel empathy for Mickey and I think he got what he deserved. Totally. It is that two of Mickey's siblings had committed suicide since then. And a lot of the family has they refuse to watch the movie. Some say it's accurate. Some say it's not accurate. But I don't know. That's on them. They could have stopped the abuse and they really didn't. I mean,
I'm not going to put it on anyone else to stop the abuse.
One brother did say he felt the system failed them both. And that is a true story because he felt that if Mickey got help, he wouldn't have been as terrible as a human as he was.
I'm sorry. If you feel like the system could have helped and you knew of the abuse and you could have done that.
Right.
As family. So
you're funny. You're like, I'm not gonna blame it on anyone else. Switch.
I'm just saying that. I'm like, you can't in one breath say the family can in one breath say I had no knowledge of the abuse, and another breath a family member saying the system failed them both. In one.
Well, remember, we do know that they knew because they tried to stop it at one point in time.
I thought the parents did. I didn't know that their brothers knew. Regardless, I'm not saying that it lies on anyone. I feel like Mickey had no excuse. The parents at least tried to call the police. I think if anything, the system failed Francine. I don't know if it failed Mickey.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I think it failed right. Francine. There were multiple. Like, sure. In this time, she made the effort to get divorced, go through the process, go through the legal right. system, separate herself.
Call the police multiple times.
They just if you refuse to help, then to say that she needs some ridiculous excuse like temporary insanity just because she did it in self-defense is a proposition so ridiculous to me that I can't even say it out without scoffing at it. Like, no.
Right.
Anyways, that was a good case. I'm glad that you covered a case where I can feel good about an outcome. in a weird way, I feel good about it. I feel, just like you said, she was the hero who saved herself because no one else could save her.
Yeah, and possibly her four children, you know? At least they didn't have to keep witnessing that. We will catch you next week with a drink in hand.
Don't let the murder thoughts bite. Bye. Bye.